folks. Let the record show that the Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting was convened at 8:07 today. We have present Representative Foster, Representative Quito, Representative Reinbold, and myself, Co-Chair Ledoux. We also have Chris Jones, our recording secretary, and Alex Judice, who is our LIO moderator. And we have our CRA, one of our CRA committee aides, and that is Lisa Vaught. And unfortunately, Kimberly Clark, who is our other committee aide, she is not well today. So we're all thinking about you, Kimberly. Please, everybody, turn off your cell phones. And today we have just one item on the agenda, and that is HB 296, State Land Disposal Leaseholder Preference. And today I am going to be turning over the gavel to Representative Foster, because this is a CRA bill that my office has crafted. So with that, I will turn over the gavel to Pro Tem Chair,
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Neil Foster. And I will be joining for a little bit my aide, Thomas Brown, in talking about the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Liu. And if you could just put yourself on the record and introduce HB 296.
Good morning, Chairman Foster and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gabrielle Ledoux, and I represent District 13, which comprises East Anchorage, Muldoon, and Joint Base Elmendorf. Well, actually, not the Elmendorf portion of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. House Bill 296 establishes a new preference right for people holding a state lease to buy the land before the state transfers the property to a community. This right is contingent upon certain conditions, chief among them that the leaseholder must have invested in the land, assembled a building on the land, and received at least 25% of their total income from the land over the preceding 10 years. This right is also without a competitive bid, and the land would be sold at fair market value. This bill is necessary to protect the livelihoods of people who have invested their time, sweat, and money into businesses that often serve our unique Alaskan lifestyles. After working the land for years, perhaps decades, a person should have some assurance that their efforts would be protected and be given the chance to purchase the land they have labored on for so long. I urge you to support this bill, and with that, I'll turn it over to my staff, Thomas Brown, who's going to give you the details about the bill.
Okay, and Representative Ledoux, I assume he'll be talking about the committee substitute for HB 296, correct? And if that's the case, maybe if I could have a motion first to bring that before the committee, and then we can have Thomas speak to the bill and have discussion. So,
okay. Chair Foster, I move to bring committee substitute for House Bill 296, version 28, LS1375/U before the committee for discussion.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion to hear from the sponsor.
Okay, and thank you, Representative Ledoux, and if your staff could go over the changes and speak to the bill. Thank you.
And I'm going to join you back at the table right now. But you are going to keep the gavel.
Oh. Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Thomas Brown, staff to Representative Ledoux. Before I get into the changes of the bill, I'm just going to give you a brief rundown of the bill itself and the purposes of it. The bill before you this morning, House Bill 296, provides for certain individuals to receive a preference right to purchase certain state land without a competitive bid. The purpose of this legislation is to allow state land leaseholders the first right of refusal on land that they have made investments on and on which they depend for their livelihood. Current state statutes allow for an individual to receive a preference right to purchase up to 5 acres of state land under certain conditions. A, the individual must have erected a building on that land. B, the land must have been used for 5 or more years for bona fide business purposes under a federal permit or without the need for a permit, and after state selection under a state permit or lease. And C, the business the land is used for must have produced at least 25% of the individual's total income for the preceding 5 years, for the 5 years preceding the application for a preference right. This bill would extend the first right of refusal to individuals who have a state-issued lease for land that is involved in a municipal entitlement and selection. This preference right to purchase up to 5 acres of land without competitive bid will be granted under the following conditions. One, the individual must have erected a building on the land. Two, they have used the land for bona fide business purposes for 10 or more years under a state lease that was issued competitively. And three, the individual has received at least 25% of their total income for the 10 years preceding the application for the preference right. Specifically, the specifics of the program are, in the case of a municipal entitlement selection of state land, an individual who meets the conditions previously outlined and applies for a preference right within 120 days of notice of a municipal entitlement selection will be granted a preference right to purchase the land. The land will be sold at fair market value of the unimproved land as determined by an appraisal and survey to be paid for by the applicant. And three, it also provides a mechanism by which a municipality will be compensated for the land if leaseholder chooses to purchase it. The remaining amount of land within the overall municipal entitlement will be reduced by the amount of land the leaseholder purchases, up to 5 acres. And the revenue from the purchase of the parcel will be given to the municipality. Now, there's a zero fiscal note from the Department of Resources, Natural Resources attached, and now I'd be happy to go through the differences between the original version and the work draft you have adopted.
Are there any questions at this point of the committee before we do that? Okay, good. Mr. Brown?
There should be in your packet a description of the line-by-line list of all the differences between the original version and the CS before you. A couple of them are just minor semantic changes. On page 2, line 9, the words "an active" were changed to "a valid." The next line, "on which there is a," was replaced with "that has a." I believe that we have someone from the Department of Natural Resources on the line who can speak to the specifics of why those changes were necessary. That same line and the following line, lines 10 and 11, clarify that the state-issued land lease had been issued competitively. Line 12 clarifies that the municipal entitlement is a land selection. Two changes on the following line, line 13. One was adding the word "further." The next line was removing the word "lessee." Lines 14 through 17 clarifies the conditions under which an individual will be granted a preference right. Lines 17 through 19 provides for a time limit within which to apply for the preference right, 120 days. Line 19 adds the words "if the director grants the preference right." Lines 21 through 22 reference the appropriate appraisal statute. That would be AS 38.05.840. Line 25 references the statute that outlines how a written determination is administered. And lines 26 through 30 insert a provision for compensating municipalities for land purchased by the leaseholder with a preference right. And those are all the changes from the original to the CS.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Are there any questions of the committee?
Are we going to hear from the department?
Representative Ledoux, are you aware of the...
I think the department is here. We have people from the department answer questions.
Okay. Representative Keita, we have, and by the way, welcome. We have Wynn Menifee from DNR, as well as Ashley Brown from the Department of Law. Are you both online, available for questions?
This is Wynn Menifee, and I am available.
Okay, and Ashley, are you there?
This is Ashley Brown, and I'm available as well.
Okay. Representative Keto, do you have any questions?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I do actually have a couple of questions for the department. And thank you, Thomas, good presentation. Can anybody let me know when or we have two people on the line. Sorry, Wynn and
Ashley.
And Ashley.
Ashley, okay. I'm curious how many of these in-holdings do you anticipate this bill might affect?
Chairman, Representative through the Chair, this is Wynn Menifee, and I'm the Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water with the Department of Natural Resources. In answer to that question, we actually expect relatively few leases that will actually qualify for this, and it's a matter of how many leases actually can meet all the criteria and have a municipal entitlement selection on them. Statewide, we have about 69 competitive leases, and but that's just statewide. Now, you have to overlay that with where there's municipal entitlement selections, and that narrows down, and then you say how many people actually meet the criteria of the 25% of total income, have been operating for 10 years, and that aspect of it, and have constructed the building. So, and then, lastly, that they actually want to buy it. And so, all in all, I think it's going to be a fairly low number, probably in the range of probably less than 10.
Okay.
Actually,
just one separate question. I think by doing this, allowing a private entity or organization to purchase this land, does that create an access right to an in-holding at some point in the future?
Representative through the Chair, that does not, and that is another issue, and it is not addressed in the bill. When the land was state land, typically the access is not as big of an issue, because if you have surrounding state land, there's multitude of ways to have that access, whether it's generally allowed uses or whether they acquire a separate easement or something to get in, or they're just coming in through a navigable water body. At which point, the time that the land gets transferred to the municipality or surrounding land gets transferred to the municipality or borough, it's unclear what access the borough will or will not allow. This bill does not address that. Typically, there's very little interest in the municipalities to restrict the access, because they want the revenue off of those lands, and so it hasn't been an issue in the past, but at the same time, I can't say that it's guaranteed.
Okay, thank you. Are there further questions of the committee? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to go ahead and open public testimony for HB 296. And is there anybody online or in the audience who'd like to testify on the bill? Looks like we have a Mel Gillis from Fairbanks. Mel, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, if you could.
And I guess I'm just one of those 10. I thought there was quite a bit more of us, but I think the people have kind of given up and stopped trying to go ahead and get their lands, or lands that they would like to have.
Mr. Gillis, if you could just identify yourself for the record and also state your affiliation and proceed.
My name is Mel, M-E-L, Gillis, and I'm just an individual.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, if you could please proceed.
Okay. Well, it happened quite a bit up in the state, and I guess I'm kind of bitter because I lost my business after 43 years, and I just always thought the Constitution kind of said that land was going to be made available for development. And, you know, that was in Section 8. And there's no way for anyone, I've been trying to get a piece of land out where I'm at since 1984. I put in a nice place out there. I got a state lease. Built a nice place, all with permission from DNR. And 15 years after I started, municipality came in and asked for it. And state went ahead and gave it to them. And, I just felt a little bit let down because I'd been trying to buy it for 15 years. And like I say, all my investments were on it and everything. And I spent $247,000 trying to save my lodge and 5 acres of state land. And this will stop that from happening again, this deal. Get it worked out. But I just wish you'd look at it and try to figure out some way that a person in this state could get a piece of state land that they were smart enough to choose without the DNR telling them what they could and could not have. I guess that's about where I'm coming from. So, I've been trying to get some of this language and stuff, and this is the best that they could come up with, so it will help, but it's only a first step in correcting a problem with DNR. I guess that's about all I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Gillison, and just for the committee, I wanted to say that I believe you're from Fairbanks. Is that correct, Mr. Gillis?
Yes, I'm from Anchorage. I had to fly for a meeting today. I'm from Anchorage.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Reinbold has a question.
Hello, Mel. This is Representative Reinbold, and I heard about your story years ago from an employee at DNR, and it's a sad story. And I think this bill is definitely a step in the right direction. I think hopefully it'll make this better for future Alaskans who try to work really hard to create businesses in this state and help prevent the unfair action. So anyway, I just felt like I need to apologize on behalf of the state, even though I had nothing to do with this. It was just your story was just a very, very sad story that you had a good business out there and really unfortunate things happen. And I just hope that we're business friendly in the state and that things like this don't continue to happen. So thanks for your testimony.
Well, you are business friendly, I guess, but let me tell you this, with DNR, the American dream in Alaska and Alaska did, where you go out, you bust your butt, you work hard, you get ahead, you get a business going, and you have to do that on a piece of leased land. Like I say, I've been trying to buy this piece of land since 1984, and there's no way to do it. And, you know, you'd get another lease after 25 years, but you don't. There's nothing guaranteed with DNR. So, it's the American dream in Alaska, if you're trying to start a business in the bush, is dead. And it needs to be fixed for the future people.
We have a follow-up with Representative Reinbold, and then a question from Representative Ledoux.
Well, thanks for bringing it forward, and I think that's exactly what the bush needs and the communities, the smaller communities need is a business-friendly climate. So I'm hoping that DNR is taking note, and I hope people will bring forth concerns to us so we can try to make things better out there.
Thank you. Representative Lydia.
Hi, Mel. How you doing? Okay.
It sounds like Mr. Gillis disconnected, I guess. Representative Ledoux, did you want to make a comment?
I was just trying to clarify whether or not this bill actually helps Mr. Gillis or just future people, and I think it's just future people.
Okay. Okay, is there anybody else in the room or online who'd like to testify? Please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Thor Stacey, and I represent, I represent the Alaska Professional Hunters Association as their lobbyist. I appreciate the chance to come forward on this bill. Mr. Gillis is a longtime member of our organization, and there's some institutional knowledge of his issue, and our board has made it pretty clear that they support the concept of this bill. I think that they understand that in the case of Mr. Gillis, it's too late of an action by the state, but that there are a couple other hunting guides that potentially have a similar issue. So to begin with, I guess the Alaska Professional Hunters Association has about 120 professional members that are registered guides across the state. Alaska's guiding industry, according to our most current economic numbers, results in about $80 million of associated economic impact to the state, about $55 million new dollars to the state in 2013. 50% of that economic impact is rural. 50% of the spending and the new dollars in employment is outside of urban centers in Alaska. A good example of rural economic development that comes with some types of hunting operations is what these types of lodges or leases house. So Alaska has a diversity of hunting services. Some guides choose to go through the laborious process of getting state land leases and making improvements. They make those improvements with the idea that Alaska's climate is harsh and that certain clients that come here would prefer to have a base of operations or a warm lodge to base out of it before they spike out and go hunting. These individuals that take that risk on face a lot of business risk as far as just the economics of rural Alaska and moving materials across vast distances, building improvements that are where there is no code. These individuals have a general faith that the system encourages this, and that not only is this something that's legal to do, but it's something that is in all of our better interest to have certain types of infrastructure across these remote areas of the state. The support for this bill comes right to that point, that when people choose to make this investment, they know that there's a risk and that there's nothing guaranteed. However, when one government entity overlaps another and makes a selection, and the improvements they built and invested in can suddenly be bought out from underneath them when they felt that they had some form of, that their actions were not just to benefit themselves but had a larger interest, I think that concept of the bill is what my board supports, and that they see it as a potential for injustice, and that at least it gives the individual a chance to fairly enter into a process to purchase the improvements that they built, not necessarily the land underneath it, but the improvements that they put on top of it. So from that perspective, our group, from a rural economic perspective, from a diversity of services, from a safety perspective, and from the supportive position of there's a basic social contract where people choose to make these developments, not just in their interest, but it can benefit others. We would be in strong support of this bill.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, I appreciate your testimony. And let's see here. I guess before we move on, I just wanted to give the committee an opportunity, again, if you had any questions for DNR or Department of Law, any further questions there? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. And Representative Ledoux, do you have any final comments?
I think this is a good bill. I hope you guys will pass it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'd like to entertain a motion to move CS for HB 269. Oh. Can we take any of these? Coming out of Eddie's, and just a little housekeeping here, Representative Pugh.
Thank you, and I'll remove my objection to adoption of the committee substitute.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, I'd like to entertain the motion to move the CS.
Okay, Co-Chair Foster, I move committee substitute for House Bill 69, version U, from CRNA.
Okay, and that was HB 269?
Yeah, HB 269, version U.
Great. 296.
Oh, sorry, there's a typo. There's a typo on my thing. I apologize. You were correct. Thank you for catching that. House Bill 296, version 28LS1375-U. With attached fiscal note and recommendations.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Reinbold. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, CS for HB 269, version U, is moved from committee. And appreciate your time. And if we could just go ahead and stick around to sign the committee folder, and we'll go ahead and adjourn for the day. It is 8:38 in the morning. Thank you, everybody.